Cue the defense, the best podcast in the world. We're out here.
I keep saying Henry's a forward.
Richie, who's the best striker you played against?
Henry.
And the fact that we had now taken our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable.
If you're going to take the time to go and get a pig head and break my locker open and wrap my clothes in it, that's sending a different message to me.
I've had to protect my family from going out into the street because you'll have random people that just coming up and abusing them racially. Even some old school managers who are British, they still have the same racial undertones like the man in the street who they're trying to condemn.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence. It's the second one in a week. Premier League review show, that is. I'm your host, Del. I don't have an American co-host. I have Rodri Giggs, though. How you doing, Rod?
Yeah, I'm good. I joined that thing.
Yeah?
That's picking picks, is it?
Yeah, perfect picks.
Perfect picks, yeah. Didn't do very well, but yeah, joined.
How'd you get on?
Yeah, crap.
Yeah. Well, this game week was my worst game week. I only got two right out of...
I think I got Everton and United.
Did you get the actual score as well in terms of the number of goals?
No.
Yeah. It's quite frustrating. It really is. But one week you have a great week, and then like this week, this is my worst week. I don't even know how many points I've got in total. In fact, let me have a look. 15 points.
I've done the NFL ones as well this week, so...
Ah, well, yeah. That's why I introduced you first, because we didn't have an American guest, and... Since you know you're American football, I figure I'll bring you in first. So,
yeah.
And you're wearing Under Armour as well, so more Americanisms here. Well done.
Yeah, it's comfy. It's nice. I like this recently, you know. I started buying a lot more of this.
Okay. Good. So the Americans call you Rodri.
Well, yeah.
USA.
Thank AJ. He's promote, big promoter.
Yeah. There you go. Steve, how you doing?
Hi, Stel. All right, mate.
Yeah, good, mate. Yourself?
I'm really good, yeah. Fine.
Your soundbite the other day about the footballers hugging and all that. I get the feeling you're going to be going off on one again, given what happened with Arsenal the other day.
I could do, yeah. It's just not how I think a game should finish. So I'm very much in the Roy Keane camp. He's got the profile, the status to follow in. Better knowledge language than me. I'm okay with all that, but if I could mirror what he says, I'd like to try, because I just don't see it. I'm very much in agreement. Call it old school. Shake hands before a game, maybe. Shake hands at full time, definitely. But just get off the pitch, and if you want to socialise with the opposition, do it through the week, do it on the phone, do it away from the stadium, but don't do it at full time with your hand behind your mouth, your hand over your mouth. Sorry. And all giggles and chuckles, especially as one of the lads has probably had a worse game and possibly lost. It's all nonsense.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'll tell you what, let's start with that game then. Get that one out of the way, because we do a lot of Arsenal bashing, and they finally scored a goal in open play. Whoa, why are you laughing? It's true.
I just like to laugh at Arsenal.
It's a comedy corner, isn't it? So they got their first goal in open play. Unfortunately for them, they drew. Theo Walcott gave Southampton the lead. To be honest, there wasn't really much in this game that I can discuss apart from another red card for Arsenal, Gabriel, who I believe his birthday is coming up at the weekend, so he misses a game, but he gets to celebrate his birthday, I guess. Rod, did you watch the game? And if so, what did you make of Southampton's performance?
It's like a game of 2 hours, probably the first half. Well, I'll say that. Arsenal did very well with 10 men. Yeah, Southampton did well the first half, and then... You know, you'd expect Arteta to have a word with them and they come out a bit better, you know. Stupid again, sending off. Why would you do that when you're on a yellow card? You know, it's just daft. You just keep just players letting the manager down, his teammates down all the time. You know, it's difficult with 11 men at the minute for Arsenal. So with 10 men, you know, you've got to give them the credit, because they did play well and they did have a couple of chances and they could have nicked it in the end, but... Yeah, it's just Southampton did well, but Arsenal come on strong. But, you know, with 10 men, Southampton would probably be disappointed to come away with just a draw.
Did you see much of an improvement in Arsenal then since the Burnley game? because second half they scored the goal early and they were in the ascendancy, and then obviously Gabriel sending off absolutely killed them, didn't it?
Yeah, like I say, you know, you let the manager down, you let the players down, you let the fans down by just being stupid like that. When you've got a yellow card, you can't, especially pulling back someone. And you know, Walcott been about, he played the game. He only like touched him, but he's gone down, and it was a rightful yellow and a second yellow and a red card. So you just can't do it. Especially this modern game. You know, you put your hand on someone and they're gonna go down. And like I say, rightly so, he should have been sent off, and he put his team in the mire. But, you know, they weathered the storm. And like I say, they could have nicked it in the end. But, you know, if you're Southampton, you'd be probably disappointed to come away, especially scoring the first goal, then, you know, playing with half an hour which against 10 men.
Yeah, you pretty much answered the question I was going to ask Steve, to be honest. I was going to ask, you know, Southampton went a goal up, conceded, then Arsenal went down to 10 men, and you're thinking, Southampton can actually nick it here. And to be fair, they had a couple of half chances, and that Gineppo was very, very wasteful, especially out wide. His delivery was absolutely appalling. But Steve, do you think Southampton will come away disappointed, as Rod said?
Possibly that they didn't cash in on the 11v10 experience, but in any calendar year going up to this year, you'd take a draw against Arsenal, I think, of course. And I still think that applies still. You know, it's interesting you say about, you know, the centre-half's birthday, and he's suspended this weekend. Interesting to see if he jets out anywhere as opposed to doing some extra training at the training ground. Try and keep an eye on that. But no, I don't think so. I think that's a real working class hand. Well, I was going to say handshake was a little bit more than that, what we saw, but shake hands on a draw. That there seems to be a bit of positivity coming out of Arsenal. They're trying. Two of the team have come out and said the last person that should be criticised is the manager. Aubameyang has scored a goal. David Seaman has come out from nowhere and suggesting that Arteta needs to be backed and supported. So, you know, they're desperate for anything at the moment, and I'm happy to go with that and see how they progress now. And in terms of Southampton, for where they are, I think everybody's recognising that they have everybody's football courtesy and respect now for what's gone on since that 9-0 last season against Leicester and where they are in the Premier League now. But I think it'll level out lower than where they are, and I think they'll look back on this point rather than where they are now and think that was a really good draw we had at Arsenal. I think it was all fair.
Yeah. I agree. There's one thing I need to ask you, Steve, from a tactical perspective. I noticed that prior to Arsenal going down to 10 men, Ceballos and Elneny were very, very deep. And the gap between them and Nketiah was 10 to 15 yards. Now, I get it. They want to hit teams on the counter-attack. But I'm half expecting at least one of those central midfielders to play a little bit more forward, to be that go-between, to be that person to link up play. And Ceballos is a fantastic talent. Granted, he is a bit flaky, he's a bit erratic, but he can produce the goods. Now, do you think Arteta deployed him in a more deeper role? Because at this moment in time for Arsenal, things are going so bad, it's damage limitation.
Everything what you've just said there, yeah, they can't be doing anything. There's nothing they can be doing up to that point still with confidence, nothing. Handing the team sheet in, you must have been looking at things, there must have been holes in it. You know, obviously conceding again, going down to 10 men. They're not in a confident spot at the moment. So you can imagine the error on the side of caution more than anything, I think. If you're full of beans, if you're full of points, if you're ahead, if everything's in place, I think you possibly, you know, are a little bit more expansive. But I think there's going to be a negative feel towards their approach in terms of settling things down. Almost like David Moyes has done at West Ham, you know, settle it down first before you can move it forward. That's exactly what Sean Dyche is in the process of doing now, settle it down to move it forward. I get the feeling that even though Arsenal are expected to do better than West Ham and Burnley, is that what Arteta is doing exactly that now is just, I can't just go from bad to good somewhere in the middle first before we can become good again. So I'm more than in agreement that he was probably just putting a shade on the adventure of what he should do in that game.
Well, hopefully for Arsenal's sake, they'll be a bit more adventurous going forward because they have the ability to get at teams. We've seen it in the past, especially back in the last season. But as you said, the bereft of confidence at the moment. So Let's
see. And of course, Walcott playing, you know, he probably gets in the Arsenal team now.
Oh, yes.
You know, which is, he's since moved on, you know, to Everton and back to Southampton, but he would actually get in the Arsenal team, score over 100 goals, scored in more cup finals than Thierry Henry, one of the youngest players to ever play for England or go to a World Cup. Possibly he doesn't get the credit he deserves, being inconsistent in the wide area, maybe the injuries, but he's a super Premier League player, Theo Walcott.
100%. All right, let's talk about one more thing in relation to this match. The conversation or what we saw at full-time between Holding and Walcott. We saw Leno come in to give Walcott a hug and then laughing away as he walked off camera. There was Maitland-Niles and Walker Peters having a conversation. Now, again, as you said at the beginning, Steve, it's Roy Keane-esque saying, you know, we disagree with it, but let's not make any bones about it. Like I said in my tweet earlier, which got a lot of attention, your club is 5 points from the relegation zone. You've just drawn at home. Granted, Southampton are having a good season so far, but these are the games that you should be winning to get yourself back on track. And when I see the players laughing and joking at full time, hugging, when we're told maintain your social distancing, what's all that about? And then people telling me, well, they take their COVID test before the game. Well, mistakes happen. And some people fail to disclose that kind of information. But what do both of you feel about what happened at full time? I know people say, well, what's that got to do with anything? But for me, it's something that we need to discuss, because when you're a football fan, granted, emotions are high, especially when your team hasn't got a result. But then you see your players laughing and giggling with the opponents. I don't care if they're mates. You do that off the pitch. Or at least when the cameras aren't on you, for crying out loud.
Well, I totally agree with you. I totally agree with Roy Keane, and I'm sure Rodri will endorse. But it seems a generation change. We touched on it on the last show with you. You know, all of these players now, there are foreign players, of course, that come into the Premier League, but largely most have gone through the academy system. And I think it's soft and well kept. And I think it encourages a non-winning environment. You know, hate is a strong word, but you are battling for those 3 points. You're battling for a win bonus against the opposition, that, you know, to put food on the table for your family. You're battling for your careers. And for me, that runs through, just call it a 3 o'clock kickoff. For me, that runs through till 5 o'clock. It runs through till 5 o'clock. Like I say, touch and go whether you shake hands with somebody before the game. More likely, it'd be a nod of the head from myself. I'd just nod my head. Someone that I respect and appreciate, you know, and appreciate, even a friend. Then get amongst it in the game and get away with as much as you can and try and be a winner against, you know, take every advantage to beat that player and beat his team. And then at full time, without a shadow of a doubt, I don't think I've ever not shook the hands of officials and certainly my direct opponent. And if I've got a friend on the opposition, I would do the same. But to think of a cuddle, an arm round, a bear hug. I know this was before the game, but I saw John Stones having a fight with Joe Hart for old time's sake. I saw the big cuddle with Harry Maguire. In the old days, the manager is first down the tunnel and he's waiting for you, for the whole team to come in, and he's waiting to either praise you or he's waiting to give you an hard time. But the guarantee is he's waiting for you. You wouldn't spend too much time on the pitch. The only time you would be doing it would be, I imagine, for these top players, would be to appreciate the supporters. But to have a confab and a catch-up and put the hand over the lips so you can't be lip-read and cuddle and smile and laugh, it would have to be at 5 o'clock for me, half an hour after the game, quarter past five, or even not at all. But the last thing I would want to be seen visually by supporters, and now these days with cameras, is cuddling the opposition and having a laugh and joke 20 seconds at full time. A, I couldn't do it. B, I wouldn't be seen doing it.
I agree, mate. And Rod, we saw Arteta being the first down the tunnel. Aubameyang trudged off. It was more like that Grand Theft Auto meme where he goes, oh shit, here we go again. That look on his face. Do you agree with what Steve said?
Yeah, I just don't get it. So, you know, play football for numerous years. I used to have fights in training sessions all the time if I was getting beat or if it. And, you know, imagine if it was a game. Yeah, it's just, you know, I'm different, says like, give a nod. I don't care. I'd shake someone's hand and be pally with them. I'm still going to kick them and go through them. It's meant to be playing against my granny. I'm still going to do it. But that's because I wanted to win and I was fired up and that's the way I was wired. But all, everyone's different. But most of the people today, they're all, cuddly or, you know, I'll DM you and all that crap. So yeah, it's not for me in any of that. Just, you know, you play football, you have a good battle, and then you know you might have a drink in afterwards, but I probably wouldn't even do that, to be honest.
Brilliant, fantastic. Okay, let's talk about another draw. City 1, West Brom 1. I had City to win by 2 goals in that game. And when Gundogan gave them the lead, I thought, here we go. City going to absolutely storm them. But Steve, weak defending, lack of concentration. As you spoke about the other day, the hissy fits from certain players. The thing is, the story wasn't Man City being held to a draw. It was Slaven Bilic getting the sack, which... again, befuddles me, but what's your thought on the City game or City's performance?
Well, you say weak defending, but it doesn't help when the manager never names the same back four for the two games running. We know these lads can play football, but I don't believe any of them are in rhythm at any point. Kyle Walker's the nearest you can get in rhythm, but he's now being taken out for a so he can't be dropped, must be a rest. Stones is never fit or in rhythm. Diaz is fit, but not in rhythm. Laporte is never fit completely and he's now benched. Mendy's never fit or in rhythm. Zinchenko's a backup player. So there's a back line there that's fragile in terms of its selection. In doing so, he's played with an extra midfield player this year, I think, to protect the fragile back line. No longer got Vincent Kompany in it behind them, although he had obviously injury problems, but it was strong when he was in it. So an extra midfield player to already protect an inconsistent, fragile selection in the back line. Now, taking an extra midfielder off the front, then obviously takes something off the front. And then when you've got Kevin De Bruyne, a year older, Aguero recovering from injury, not yet starting games. Raheem Sterling does everything in bundles. There's no doubt about that. His numbers have been excellent. He hardly assists anybody, but his numbers are excellent. But at the moment, his numbers aren't high. So if you don't assist and you're not scoring at the moment, then you've got to suggest that Raheem Sterling isn't doing much. And credit to Wan-Bissaka, he always plays well against him. And you've got De Bruyne still putting the same balls in, spoilt rotten, which has been great, that he's been used to somebody, you know, touching, toe-poking, nudging home at the end of his work. My disappointment has been the petulance, teetering with Kevin De Bruyne. He's chundering, he's sarcastically mocking and he's turning his back while the game is in play when his ball hasn't been met by a teammate. And I'm keeping my eye on that, but I don't like it, but I love him. And I think obviously on the day, we could be talking about a different story here. I think it has to be a mention for Sam Johnstone in the goal for West Brom, who stopped the goal, the goals going in and the game being 4-1 to City. So we've seen it so many times, but this time the goalkeeper played well. So we could end the conversation there. The goalkeeper was the man of the match, but I am spotting quite a few little deficiencies in Manchester City creeping and getting worse still.
So this appears to be an attitude problem. Where does this stem from then, or who is responsible to sort this all out?
Well, visually, when City, you know, are threatening to score 10 in a game, which they have done on many occasions, you know, when they're getting fours, fives and sixes, would this be the day to get 10? Guardiola is a genius, the best head coach in the world, although I think Jurgen Klopp's got the award again this morning, so he isn't. My concern is the two-year contract for the manager, and the manager doesn't really look happy. The suggestions he looked tired. I don't think he looks tired anymore, but visually, there was a spell when he was bringing John Stones over to the touchline, putting his arm around his ribs and teaching him the game and pointing all around the Etihad. And the pundits on the television would say, look at this manager, he never stops coaching. But what they never followed up with was it also coincided with the worst 15 months of football that John Stones has ever had in his life. Now that stopped. So there's a reason that stopped, but also now John Stones is playing well. Then at halftime, he would always grab Raheem Sterling, it felt like, in front of the cameras and coach him all the way off the pitch and all the way down the tunnel. And the pundits would say, oh, look at him, he never stops coaching. Well, that stopped. And he was always on the nod and the wave and the thumb up with Kevin De Bruyne as though there was an unbelievable connection that them two were on the same page, an elite page that nobody else was on, and they get each other's drift. Well, that stopped as well. And my biggest concern is that he does most of his coaching when the team are 2-0 up, visually. But when they go 1-0 down these days, the camera flashes to him and he's not just sat in his seat, he's slumped in his seat. And his staff are no longer to, allowed to sit too close to him because of COVID. And he just looks a dejected chaser. And, you know, if you look over as a player at your leader being like that, you can pretty much guarantee that the team's performances will follow. And that's what I think we're seeing.
Mm. Watch this space, I guess.
Well, we will. But still, you know, at least the second best coach in the world, and City are still in the, well, now in the top five teams in England. But you know, for a, wasn't that long ago, they were clearly the best team in England, and now quite clearly they're not.
Mm. You're right. Rod, apparently, from what I hear, West Brom were actually ready to brief the press prior to the City game that Slaven Bilic had got the sack, but they waited until full-time. Here's a guy that got him promoted, and it's almost as if West Brom came into the Premier League with the same mentality as a team that has just got relegated from the Premier League. They hardly backed him in the summer, and this is what you get, right?
We've seen it before, mate, from these clowns. You know, Darren Moore, he did a fantastic job there, and they got rid of him far too soon, and they've done it again. They've obviously thought, you know, the deal's been done before the game, and they thought they're going to get walloped, and they've gone and got probably the best result of the season, which has put more egg on the face. So yeah, it's just don't get it. You get a guy that gets them promoted, you know, he's not Sheffield United, he's not 1 point, you know, all right, he's 7 or 8 points, but you know, he's one win away from being at the bottom three. So yeah, I just don't get it. But obviously, they're obviously panicking, and you know, they've pressed the panic button, and in comes Big Sam.
They must be, well, Bilic must be very gutted at this moment in time, because I think they offered him a new contract in the summer. He didn't sign it. I think that's probably when the problem started. We saw on the opening day against Chelsea, I believe it was. Was it the opening game where they drew 3-3?
With the contract, you don't know the situations though, do you? You don't know you don't know the ins and outs of a contract. So it's quite easy to say, you know, his contract, but it might have been a crap deal, and you might have thought, wait a minute, I've just got your Premiership promoted, which has brought you millions and millions of pounds, and they've given the dog shit offer. So that's why he might have turned it down. So,
well, it might be a lot of it. On the flip side, how many Premier League managers that get their teams promoted are usually there halfway through the season? It happens so many times that a team gets promoted and they sack their manager halfway through the season. If you'd have signed a new contract, at least a year extension, they'd have paid him out for the rest of the year. But now, he's a... Mind you, he's got enough money.
Yeah, well, like I say, he's still not adrift like Sheffield United. That's, you know, they've just pressed the panic button. Is it too early? They'll probably get relegated with Slaven Bilic. So in hindsight, it might be the right idea, because, you know, some of us have got, you know, vast experience of getting teams out of this kind of trouble. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Are you disappointed they didn't appoint Eddie Howe?
You know, he's too good for that, I think.
Waiting for the Celtic job, isn't he? Or Real Madrid.
What the rebuild job?
managerial rehab, the SPL, yeah. Oh, crikey. Let's talk about Leeds against Newcastle United, Steve. Quite an entertaining game. Newcastle going ahead, Leeds equalising, Leeds going ahead, and then Newcastle equalising. And after that, Newcastle, they went for the win instead of holding out for a draw, and they conceded 3 goals. Great performance from Leeds second half, must admit. Clinical finishing, especially on the counter-attack. The state of that pitch, though. Did you see it? The amount of bobbles.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Great. Absolutely. And I think, obviously, in the last show, I think you were quite rightly throwing the question marks about Leeds. And we did actually, between us, leave it quite vague, because we didn't know if they had a plan B. They didn't know whether they were going to score a lot of goals in games. Didn't know if they were going to share him around Bamford and if he was going to keep it going. And obviously, we weren't sure if they were going to be strong enough at the back. So it's only one game, but it's certainly the way forward. And I think that's what they'll be still. I think they'll be very much hit-miss, or maybe they want to try and run you into the ground. It won't be completely possible, because largely the opposition are as fit as each other. It's just that Leeds appear to have this style and method that is what they do. And it's, you know, I've heard a lot of credibility going Leeds' way, that that so many teams can run forward. Everybody loves running forward, but it's the running back And Leeds do that absolutely superbly. So they can have a go and then they can get back and fill holes and obviously get back into shape. So it's, we've already said that it'll be enough to see them safely, I think, in the middle of the Premier League by the end of the season. I don't see them challenging top six, top eight. I don't actually see them challenging top 10, but I certainly don't think they should fear the bottom. And it also showed that they can share the goals around. And I think Steve Bruce was ready for the break that they had at the training ground. He thought that adrenaline and initial fitness of his team would get him through the first game, which it did at St. James's Park. But it might hit him in the second, and possibly he gave an excuse and it played out actually as it was. So he knows where it was, and they'll be okay for not the result, but getting another game in the legs and resetting the physical data.
And Rod, to the Newcastle section, right? Because we seem to do this every week. Eric came on the show on Monday, Newcastle United fan. He said he would rather see Newcastle end up 15th in the table playing beautiful football than playing shit football and ending up 10th. Well, they played shit football against West Brom, but they won the game. Against Newcastle, against Leeds, sorry, midweek, or yesterday, should I say, they went for the throat and they got spanked. So what would you say to that? What do you say? I mean, I hope Eric's listening, and I'm not denigrating the guy or anything, but see?
No, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because we were talking about it a few days ago, and it's like the Kevin Keegan period that, you know, is that Newcastle way. The rest has been, you know, relegation, promotion, and now they've kind of steadied the ship. You know, there's a lot of turmoil behind the scenes, and now they seem to have steadied the ship. Steve Bruce has steadied the ship after Rafa Benitez did very well there. But yeah, it's a difficult one, mate. It's such a difficult one because there's so many better teams and teams above them that spend more money. So yeah, it's always a weird one. But yeah, you'd rather win than play great and get beat every week.
Yeah, they've got Fulham at the weekend, so I guess they're going to go back to like a 4-5-1 and get the 3 points.
To be fair, they're in the game, and it was 1-0, then it was 1-1, it was 2-1, they're going to go back to 2-0, and then I don't know what happened. They must have just folded the last 10-15 minutes because
that's for the win. In it. They went for the win. That's what happened. They went for the win, and then
you can't grumble, can you?
There you go.
So Steve Bruce has done a good job of what he's got up there. I think, like Stez says, it's the quality you bring in. Can you bring Wilson and Fraser the quality in season after season? That's the battle that they've got up there.
Yeah. And you know, there's this weird football snobbery going on, especially on social media, where it's like, if a team appoints an old English manager, he's no good straight away just because he's an old English manager. You know, not forget the fact that he's won Premier Leagues, forget the fact that he's managed all over the country and he's done a very good job everywhere he's gone. But because he's an old English manager, that means he's got old ways. He doesn't play beautiful football. So immediately, that's a bad mark on him. Sorry.
Hands down, he's a better manager and a coach than the England manager as we speak.
Well, Southgate, yeah?
100%.
The 100%. PR machine, yeah? Okay.
100%. Well, what's he actually done, Southgate, since he's been there? He's not really done... He's not really pulling up trees, are they?
Oh, careful. You have people saying they've got to a World Cup semi-final.
Yeah. Well, Wales got to semi-final Euros. Great. Not great, is it? You want to win something, especially the size of England. Wales, we're happy with the semi-final for a small country. England, with the players have got, they should be doing better. It's crap. You know, why is Grealish only just start suddenly just come on the scene? It's just a joke. He's just a Steve Bruce is a better manager.
There you go. Steve, would you believe it? Monday, we were saying Wolves need to go back to a three-man central defensive trio because it's not working. They revert back to it against Chelsea and they win.
Yeah,
what are we doing podcast for? What for?
It was quite obvious though, because there was obviously the results. I think that one tricked him a little bit. The result against out of form Arsenal, which made him think that four at the back might be the way forward for the next round of games. But I think in the next fortnight, Stel, I think what we saw then is, I think they must have looked at it and thought, hang on, nobody is benefiting from this formation. Nobody. I speak about Connor Cody because he's the only Wolves player that I know, but straight away he was under pressure. He had contact to deal with. He can, but the way he starts Wolves off with those passes right and left to both wings mostly and through the lines into strikers, he had no time on the ball in about four. And I think it was just like a hand-in-glove type of comfort relationship going back to the formation that has served them so well. But I don't mind from an outlook of, you know, looking in, that they've tried to do something different. But what I really respect is they've recognised early that it's not right and they've reset. I think that's good.
Yeah, and I think, okay, granted, people are going to say, well, Wolves snatched it at the end. By the way, you've got to play and until the final whistle. But
I've got to score it still.
Exactly. And it was a fantastic finish as well. Last minute, wasn't it? 93rd minute? 95th,
not
sorry.
Many, 95th. Not many teams come back from that. So
there you go. And they're a goal down as well. So, you know. But I've got to give special mention to Podence, the Portuguese forward, because he's been deployed as that central striker to replace Jimenez, but he's a completely different player. He's more like a playmaker. And he was all over the pitch yesterday. I saw him filling in at left back. I saw him at right back. I saw him centre mid. And that's the kind of desire that Nuno wants from his players. And I think when you got a group of players with that kind of attitude, this never say die attitude, it resonates with the rest of the team. And I think we're slowly starting to see the Wolves of old. Okay, the Wolves of old, the Wolves of last season, or maybe perhaps the season before. Last season, they fell off a little bit, but they seem to be getting back to grips with things.
Yeah, agree. And obviously, you could say this about every club, but another club with an unbelievable home crowd that get behind the team. They've been playing a lot of midweek football through the Europa competition, a lot of travelling, but they've been gathering a hell of a load of experience. And they've had to do it recently without their best player, who's in hospital, obviously discharged, and their joint best player be sold to Liverpool. So they're in a transitional period. It's a development period also for the manager, but he seems to make more better decisions than not.
Absolutely. And Rod, again, we spoke about this on Monday show about Frank Lampard, how it's almost as if he's shoehorning players in just so he can get them in the team. But they were quite disjointed against Wolves. The only real midfielder that could tackle they played was N'Golo Kante. Mason Mount played with Kai Havertz, and Wolves were overrunning them completely in the middle of the park. Now, that's two defeats on the bounce for Frank Lampard. Granted, it's not a disaster because they can always bounce back, but they've now slipped to seventh in the table.
Yeah, it's a worry because they were soundly beat by Wolves, and like you say, they were overrunning them at times. And, you know, like I said on Monday, though, they've spent a lot of money there, and it's going to take time to get players that they actually fancies and what where to play and what kind of qualities they've got. So, yeah, he's got a big job. You know, he's got a big job there, but he seems to have got off the hook a little bit because he's media savvy and he's quite, you know, friendly. He talks well, and you know, he doesn't get as much stick as like people who have been in that kind of position before. But you know, he needs to sort it out quick because, you know, £220 million is a lot of money to spend. So, you know, to be seventh is not good enough for a team like Chelsea. So he needs to fix it and sort it quick.
Yeah, I agree, mate. I agree. Steve, good win for Everton at Leicester City. 2-0 moves them up to fifth in the table. In fact, they're a point behind Leicester in fourth. Richarlison had a fantastic game. And this is the player that when Everton signed him from Watford for about £35-40 million, a lot of people saying, well, he's a waste of money and whatnot. And granted, he has been quite inconsistent. And I think the frustrating thing about Richarlison, if I was an Everton fan, I'd look at him and think, crikey, you've got so much ability. You score some important goals. But either his season gets derailed by injuries or suspension. If he can avoid picking up the odd injury and the odd stupid red card, they've got a right diamond there, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. I'm guessing probably brought up through his schoolboy system as a 4-4-2 striker. By the time he makes the breakthrough, systems have changed, and it's largely 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1, and he's probably, even though he's got the young size, he's not got the tools to be the central striker. So a lot of them then drift into that left channel, albeit right-footed. And it's very much sink or swim from that position, because they're not quite ready to be a centre-forward, and then they can go and struggle in there. They can be lost to the system. But I think he's moved into that left wing position. He can go down the line, he can attack the line, but he's so game, he's so rangy, he can come inside and behave like a centre-forward. He must be a nightmare to mark. All the throw-ins go down the line, and you're throwing it to a 6'4". He chases after everything. He's come after back from an injury well, because that's another test. That first injury that you get in the Premier League and you're out for a spell, how do you come back from it? Well, he's come through that. He's a real asset for Everton, and when he plays well and scores, they tend to win and get points out of games. So I think he's a top Premier League player. He'll be earning, obviously, a good salary. He's still developing, but Everton will see them in the top four themselves in their own ambition one day. I don't actually see it myself, but I'm sure that that's their ambition. But if not, I do see Richarlison playing for a top four club in England in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I agree, mate. And he's such a top talent. Did I say he signed from Watford or Wolves? I can't remember.
I said Watford.
Thank goodness. Yeah. I thought I was going crazy there for a second. Why am I saying Wolves again? No, he definitely signed from Watford. But interestingly enough, and I, to be honest, I didn't really not expect this. Leicester had more possession of the ball, but the score in the top left-hand corner means the most. Rod, another defeat for Leicester. It's been a yo-yo season for them, hasn't it? I know, the table doesn't lie, and they're fourth in the table at the moment and, doing well in the Europa League, but they're dropping points, but silly points at the moment. And granted, they've had their injury problems, but Brendan Rodgers must be looking at his squad thinking, guys, we could be doing so much better than we are at the moment.
Yes, but, we just talked about Everton and some of the players they've got and the top coach they've got. So they're no mugs either. They're up there as well. They're playing well. But to answer your question, yeah, he would be disappointed because, a home game, the players he's got and the result he's just had. I think they win 3-1. Is it 3-1 against?
Who, that's whoever that?
Madison got a couple.
Against Brighton.
They played well against Brighton, yeah, 3-0. So he had a good result. You'd expect them to kick on from that. But like I say, Everton, they're no mugs. They've got some really, really good players. Calvert-Lewin, hitting form with Charlton, Rodriguez. These are top players. So it can happen, but you'd expect him to... Well, it's difficult up there now. You've got United, you've got Chelsea, you've got even Arsenal, even nowhere to be seen. Tottenham. So it's difficult. I don't think Leicester are a top six side for me. Without Vardy, they're top 10. So,
it is what it is.
I don't think Leicester have got enough players in their team and squad that can score. I still think they're progressing ever so well. They're evolving, but obviously the main man is Jamie Vardy. His consistency has been brilliant, in fairness. Then you think, well, I think Harvey Barnes might get you a goal. Then you think, I think Madison might get you a decent goal. But all of a sudden, you start going down the team and I don't see goals spread against that around that team, and eventually that cost you.
Yeah. Well, they've been, again, like I said, they've been unlucky with injuries. So I know Ndidi played central defence yesterday. No Johnny Evans, no Wes Morgan, no Soyuncu. They've got Fofana that came in from Saint Etienne in the summer. So, again, that's a defensive partnership that they've never used before. Christian Fuchs is on the wrong end of 30. He has come back in at left back. I know James Justin has come in and he's done a very, very good job at right back. But at the same time, he's a rookie at the end of the day. And then you're relying on the likes of Mendy and Tielemans to do the donkey work in the middle of the park. But as you said, Steve, the reliance on Jamie Vardy is so huge at the moment. And I keep stressing the importance of this because they sold Maguire, but it was fine bringing in Soyuncu. He did a fantastic job. If they were to lose James Maddison, I'm pretty sure they'd be able to find an attacking midfielder, a creative one that can fit in. Or when he's missing, they seem to fill in that void. But when Jamie Vardy's not there, they haven't got anyone in that team that can get half the amount of goals that he scores.
Yeah, yeah. It's the same with City and Aguero. These are elite Premier League footballers, elite Premier League strikers. Vardy, Aguero. You think there's a young pretender that shares the minutes with them, plays up alongside them. I know no comparison, but use Iheanacho for an example at Leicester, use Jesus as an example at City. And the team are just nothing like when these golden boots basically don't play. So it's credit to what Vardy's done with his career. But you're right. And like I say, my concern would be about the spread of goals for Leicester City, and it'll just catch up.
Fantastic. Rod, Liverpool, another victory against Spurs. They left it late, but let's be 100% honest, mate. It was one-way traffic. Even when Spurs pulled level, I know they had a couple of chances. Harry Kane had the chance and Bergwijn had a great chance. But you got to take your chances at this level. And Firmino, last-minute header, absolute bullet.
Yeah, it was what we were used to watching, a Mourinho-type performance. You know, solid, just going to come away with a result. You know, he probably would have been happy with a 1-1 draw. You know, like you said, Liverpool were on the ascendancy at most of the game. So, yeah, it was a bad goal to give away because, you know, they've not conceded a corner all season. So, I think, Tim Sherwood giving the kiss of death, if you heard it.
Tim Sherwood.
I think if anyone's to blame it's old Tim because he jinxed him. So, yeah, you know, it's one of them zonals. You know, Harry Kane, he's been great at doing the defensive work, but would he have gone for it if he didn't have a clout on the head about 5-10 minutes before? Probably would have. So, yeah, Firmino's got half a yard and it's a great header. He's had no chance. So, you know, a deserved win for Liverpool, but, you know, as Oza said, he thought the best team lost.
Well, he's going to say that, isn't he? He's going to say that. Steve, you know what? I've got to give Liverpool credit because, you know, forget the injuries. The fact that they've played the likes of Curtis Jones, Reece Williams, they haven't been afraid to play the younger players and they're reaping the rewards. It kind of reminds me of United scene when Hansen said, "You win that with kids." You know, those players came in, they were brave. They adapted straight away. And they're getting results. And again, I hold my hands up. I thought losing Van Dijk, that would be it for them. They wouldn't be able to fill that void. But it's almost as if he's still there, really, isn't it?
No, I certainly don't want to be blasé about this, but I'm happy for anyone that says that Van Dijk is the best defender in the world in the last 18 months. I'm happy to go with that too. But I have said before that I think when you get them long-term injuries, they are worse hit in the attacking areas for teams. I know City missed Kompany, but they survived. Liverpool were missing Van Dijk, but they'll survive. But if they missed Mo Salah or Mane, then it's double jeopardy for me. I do believe basically you can fill the holes in at the back. That's not underselling the Liverpool understudies, the academies or whatever like that. But I do believe you can get players to do a job even if you are replacing the best defender in the world in the front area of the field where the strikers that pay the rent get you the goals, get you the points mostly. I know you've got to get clean sheets as well. I think it's a lot harder to fill. So, you know, Jamie Vardy, Sergio Aguero, Mo Salah, Mane, those types, possibly even Marcus Rashford now, they are harder to fill. So I can see how Liverpool have done it. And all credit to them. And they're only back where they were with Jota being out. They didn't have him when they were European champions or Premier League champions or world champions. They're getting by without Van Dijk quite comfortably. The goalkeeper's now just starting to get the odd injury, but he's now back in form. But what you've just said there, Stel, is what this has done is give the emergence of Curtis Jones. Everyone has heard of him. We saw the League Cup games and a bit of talent. And we thought, what is this guy? Is he a bit of a Steve McManaman glider, dribbler? Is he a Steven Gerrard passer that shoots from 25 yards? Well, obviously, not suggesting he'll be as good as those two great Liverpool icons. But when you're a mixture of those two types of players and you seem to be already accepted by your teammates and your manager, it looks like he's got the scout's confidence. He's certainly got the talent. what they have done in the last month still. They've found themselves a hell of a young player that's going to play more than just a bit part now.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is, he looks developed already, doesn't he? He's a big lad. You can tell he's been hitting the weights. Now, I didn't watch him last season, so I can't tell you if he's had a growth spurt or not. But as I said, you look at him in that lineup. If you're looking, you know, you don't see the name and the number on the back of his shirt, you'd think by his physicality, by the way that he holds the ball up, by the way that he distributes the ball, you'd think that he was like a Wijnaldum or a Henderson.
Yeah, but also in the dying minutes at Craven Cottage, he was the only one that could take the ball. He was the only one that had the energy to do it. But as opposed to dozens of footballers who would try and pass from their own box to the other team's box and try and get there in three or four passes, he just went 50 yards on the run with the ball at his feet, gliding, dropping shoulders, dodging tackles, and got to the edge of the Fulham box. And I think just nudged it through for a last attempt at goal in injury time. So he can dribble and drive. He can shoot. He can curl in the top corner, we've seen. And like I say, he seems a humble enough kid through their academy that was possibly looking like he wouldn't be one that would be played to sell, but he'd be one that would be in the bottom reaches of the squad. He's now looking like one of the first on the sheet. So it's another plus for Liverpool. And also, I know they didn't do it at Fulham, but they are Liverpool now, the Manchester United of the 90s. And you can guarantee that they'll get two chances in injury time when the board comes up if the game is tight. So don't be surprised that they scored a late goal and then they do it again this season on the way to the title, probably.
100%. Rod, looking at the Fulham performance at the weekend, obviously it was a much improved performance from Liverpool. But if you're Spurs, are you thinking, crikey, they were there for the taking with all the injuries, with all the brouhaha going on apart from since the Fulham game? Should the Spurs fans still feel a little bit aggrieved that they actually didn't go for the throat? Because let's be honest, Spurs can attack.
Yes, but you know they were still in the game.
Oh,
they were still in the game. You know, it was the last minute winner, and you know it's classic Jose Mourinho performance. When I was looking at it, you know, don't give nothing away, keep it tight, try and nick a goal, but you know just try and come away with something, and they nearly did it, but you know. Just fell short at the end.
Okay.
Well, you know, they can't grumble at the minute. I don't know what's happening with Gareth Bale at the minute. He's not getting he doesn't seem to be getting a lot of game time. So something, I don't know what's going on there.
Trophy wife signing.
Mm. Agree.
Look at us. Look who we got.
Yeah, but you know, as a Tottenham fan, I think. You know, they can see, you know, this team, he's changed it a lot in the last year from you know, good players, but mentally weak. And now you can see him mentally, you know, you can see Winks getting stamping, he's getting the tackling. A lot of them, you know, keeping being a bit more nastier. You know, that's obviously Mourinho rubbing off on him day by day.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, well, I don't know what to say about Fulham and Brighton and Villa and Burnley. 0-0s, didn't really watch too much of those. Shall we quickly talk about West Ham drawing against Crystal Palace? I think the only thing worth discussing was Haller's equaliser, which was absolutely phenomenal, that overhead kick. Anyone?
Which one was that? Palace and West Ham?
Yeah.
Yeah, was it 1-0? Yeah. I fancied West Ham here, to be honest. You know, they've had a good run of results. They're at home. You know, I know.
Were any fans in the stadium?
Pardon?
Were any fans in the stadium?
No, because it was Wednesday night, wasn't it?
Ah, yes. See, good result for West Ham. See, they didn't lose at home. Fans in the stadium. Whenever there's fans in the stadium, they lose at home.
The only people with fans in the stadium are Liverpool.
Oh, yeah. That's right, yeah. Because everywhere else is all right, apparently. Oh well.
Yeah.
Benteke
scored. That's why Manchester Piccadilly is so busy on a Saturday night. Everyone's going to Lime Street.
<There you go. laughs> All right, last game, gentlemen. Last game is obviously the last game that was the midweek game, is United. Man United beating Sheffield United 3-2. Bit of a nightmare start for Man United, Rod. I messaged you as soon as Sheffield United took the lead, I said, I'm not even angry. I actually found that goal hilarious. What was Henderson doing?
Yeah, just, you know, Maguire's not giving, you know, done him any favours by giving the ball there, but you can't mess about with it there. You know, it was the occasion, you know, was it too much on his mind to do that? Because you've never seen him do that before. He made one mistake the whole season last year. So possibly the occasion, being back at his old club, you know, could have been on his mind, you know, because, you know, it was a bad mistake to make. It was, like you said, I was the exact same. I was just thinking what to write because it was just a comical, and he ended up leaving it in the end. But yeah, it was funny. But, you know, his team pulled him out of it. And to be fair to him, you know, he was mentally strong, pulled some couple of good saves off, and, you know, it didn't look out of place or nervous. You know, he brushed it off and carried on, which is what you do want to see.
Yeah, and what I like most about this game is you and I, we've been talking about Pogba in the past and Anthony Martial, the two players who we feel that perhaps their attitudes haven't been great, but here they come. Stellar performance tonight. I've got to hold my hands up. Pogba was immense. Anthony Martial, although he was knocked down a couple of times, and as I message you, he looks like a cow that's been tipped over when he goes down, because it's almost as if he's never going to get back up again. But he put in a good performance, scored a goal. Pogba had part assist, didn't he? Because he did that little turn on the edge of the box and then delivered it forward. They had a good game. They had a good game.
They had Paul Pogba had a really, really good game, but that's what Roy Keane did for 35 games a season, not five. You know, you've got to replicate that, and that's what you have to do at these big clubs. So he set the standard, and we know he can do it, but he just needs to replicate it game after game after game. Yes, he's going to have a bad game now and again, but that's the kind of performance, you know, he's getting the yellow card at the end, yellow face, pushing people. That's what you want to see. And, you know, like I say, if you play like that 30 games a season, we wouldn't be having a conversation about Paul Pogba, where he's going, or is this and is that. It's just not been consistent enough. That's it. Martial the same, you know, he scored 20 goals last season. You need to replicate it to be a top striker. You know, we talk about Vardy, we talk about Aguero, these elite strikers, this is what they are. You know, if we miss Martial, we wouldn't really probably miss him, because he's not an elite striker. But if we probably miss Rashford or Bruno Fernandes, yes, we'd miss him because he scored goals and the kind of elite. So, yeah, we just, like I say, it needs to be in Manchester United. You need to do that week in, week out.
Yeah. And two fantastic goals from Rashford. One of them individually brilliant, where he brought the ball down from Lindelof's ball over the top and he finished it. And his second one was a fantastic team goal, which actually reminded me of a goal that we scored against Sheffield United in the FA Cup many years ago in the early 90s, which I think Eric scored from a counter-attack. Similar sort of thing.
Yeah, it was, you know, keeper's time. He probably had 3-1 on his coupon, but 3-2, sorry. But it was a difficult one. He should have saved it, really. But like you said, it was a great move. Referee's done really well, because, you know, these referees are like the spotlight, like the camera. So, you know, someone could have easily blown the whistle, but, you know, he kept on playing and, you know, it was a good goal, like you say. A very good move.
Who was the Sheffield United goalkeeper's head coach before Chris Wilder?
He was at Shrewsbury then, wasn't he? Dean Henderson was player of the year at Shrewsbury and then played for 2 years.
Well, Ramsdale?
Pardon?
Ramsdale? Ramsdale was the Sheffield United keeper. Who was his manager before?
Who's manager still?
Ramsdale.
Eddie Howe.
Oh, right, Eddie Howe. Okay, sorry. Yeah, anyway. Sorry, Roz.
No, Stead will tell you, but they have goalkeeping coaches now these days.
I know. I just thought Eddie Howe sprinkled some of that dust, you know, that magic dust.
There we go.
Steve, Sheffield United, in a way, I kind of felt sorry for them, because the first 20 minutes, their game plan was absolutely fantastic. They were pressing high, aggressive. When they were attacking, they had six men in the final third, something which I rarely see from teams down at the bottom of the table when they're playing the likes of United, Liverpool, etc., etc. They really went for it. Their set pieces were on point. You know, they scored from a set piece near the end. They caused United a lot of trouble, but you know, all it takes is one mistake, one lapse in concentration, and it completely changes the game. And that's what happened with Rashford's goal.
Yeah, totally. Like a Fiat Uno trying to go around the Grand Prix. Just, you know, you can start well, but you're not going to finish the race in front of Lewis Hamilton. Do you know what I mean? And Manchester United just took the game over with better players, better athletes, better form, better confidence, better patterns. So Sheffield United, I don't think we can afford to start games sloppy. I'm sure the manager's team talk, he'll have them aroused and, you know, he'll be banging his chest, and Shane, you haven't got the crowd to go with it, and I don't think there's a problem starting games, and they were obviously gifted, but you know that 96 minutes now for a team like that, bereft of points, confidence, probably ideas, even at 1-0 down, you know, you're not thinking, oh, are they going to hang? No, I don't believe anybody thought, oh, are they going to hold on for 1-0 for the next 90 minutes? Don't believe anybody thought that. I don't believe anybody will have thought, oh, I wonder if they'll get another. I think everybody thought, oh, that's a sloppy start for Manchester United. Not a great start for Sheffield United. This will probably now be 3-1. As it happened, it ended up being 3-2. So they're just well short in every department. And the biggest department that they're short in, obviously, is the points. So for me, it doesn't matter how they start, because very much how they finish. And, you know, it sounds like narrow. But the worst thing that happens to teams that are struggling still, as you know, you lose games differently every week. 3-2, 1-0, last minute, absolutely batter West Brom and not get anything. You find a different way to lose every week, and that's Sheffield United at the moment, sadly.
Yeah, and on top of that, you get injuries, you get suspensions, and it all adds up. It's that snowball effect. But for me, I think the turning point wasn't Rashford's equaliser. I think it was Sander Berger going off injured in the 12th minute. Yeah. Well, because he is absolutely key for them. And to be fair, Ethan Ampadu and John Fleck were doing a very, very good job when it came to breaking up play and closing down Matic and closing down Pogba and even Fernandes. But Sander Berger was, again, similar to what I was talking about Ceballos before. He's that middleman in between the front line and the central midfield. And when he went off injured and they brought on Jagielka, I thought, here we go. This is going to be fun, because Jagielka is close to 40. There's no way he's going to have the pace or the legs to match Martial and Rashford. And that was it. That effectively was it.
So, you know, I do know the lad, but penny for Ollie Norwood's thoughts at that moment when Jagielka comes on. There's obviously a mess. It appears to be a contractual mess with Johnny Lundstrom, who came through Everton's academy, who's had a purple patch for Sheffield United to get some admirers. That seems a long, long time ago now. So Ollie Norwood and Lundstrom used to play well. You're bringing Jagielka on. You've already got O'Connell in the treatment room that can't, you know, help the opposition, you know, stop them getting into your box. They're the best defender. So you're short in defence. You're short in midfield. You can't hit a barn door up front, although McGoldrick will be happy with two. But 20 million McBurn has done nothing. Brewster's young, obviously not done anything. And then you bring on Jagielka. It's just all the symptoms of relegation. And obviously, you don't have to be smart by saying that. You only have to look at the league table, sadly.
Well, Seth, didn't you get subbed?
That's never happened to me, mate.
No chance, mate. Must be someone else.
No chance, but not me, mate.
You won't be happy with that, though, 38 being subbed, would you?
To be honest,
he looked quite happy when he was coming off.
It was 3-1 at the time. Game was done, really.
But like I say, I can't believe Ollie Norwood, a Northern Ireland international, albeit that he retired from it. Big player for Sheffield United. The manager will have his reasons that he's not done it this season. He's used him sparingly. He's rotated him. And I've been disappointed to see it, but I can see how it's happened. But when Jagielka's coming on instead of you, at this stage of his career, I think Ollie Norwood will not be happy this morning. That doesn't feel right.
Just come to me. It's your mate, Stez, your pal Stuart Grimshaw, Bakeup Brother.
Oh yeah, it was definitely not me, mate.
No, yeah, it was right, yeah. I was winding you up.
Do you think he's gonna be watching this or listening?
We'll make sure, yeah.
No, but we'll make sure of it. It's fine. Yeah. Sorry, mate. I didn't know this was going to happen. Well, they also took off Oliver Burke, who was very, very physical up against Harry Maguire. Maguire didn't like it. Then they brought on Rian Brewster, who, apart from a couple little flicks here and there and the free kick that hit the wall, offered practically nothing.
Still, I mean, they're going to be there's going to be suggestions that they've not got a good enough squad. How did they do so well last year? But when you consider, was it 22, 24 million for Brewster, 18 million for Ramsdale, 20 million for McBurney, a contract for Jagielka, a contract for Ravel Morrison previously, a contract for Jack Rodwell, a contract for Keon Bryan out for a month, you know, whilst their budget isn't like those in the top 10 of the Premier League, but what they have, they've wasted.
I agree. Although I guess the saving grace at the moment is that they're only 9 points behind Burnley. And I say the word only because we're coming to that stage of the season. I mean, let's be honest, there's, 25 games left to go?
Still, a mention for Burnley tonight. No coincidence to me. Ben Mee's 300th game tonight. Captain of the youth team at Manchester City with me. Fantastic young man, now a man. They've had 4 clean sheets out of 6 since he's been back. The glue's back together. Tarkowski's playing better because Ben's alongside him. Pope's playing better because Ben's in the team. Aston Villa have had 27 attempts tonight at goal to win that game. And I only see Burnley nudging, but I only see them getting better now through Christmas and into New Year, whereas I don't see much progress for Sheffield United, West Brom. And I'm interested to see the up and down nature of Brighton and Fulham, but I do see Burnley getting better now. I've got to give them the credit.
They've got Wolves at the weekend, whereas Sheffield United are away to Brighton. Now, if ever there's a time to play Brighton, it's now. They got spanked by Leicester the other day. They got a 0-0 draw today at Fulham. So, given the first half performance from Sheffield United,
You say that, Stel, but you know, once the Premier League team's been beaten, it's probably more harder to play against them because you know they want to turn it around. So it's going to be very, very difficult because you know I know Sheffield United has been beat, but Brighton aren't used to getting beat like Sheffield United. All right, they're down there, but they've had the odd result. So you know the next thing they want to do is, Stel will tell you, if you get beat, you know the next thing you want is the next game to come. Thick and fast, so you can turn that around.
Brighton showing all the symptoms, Rod, of Bournemouth from last year, who obviously trapdoored it in the end. But a wide open team, full of talent, the odd maverick, bit of pace in the team. But just slippery now, just on that ice patch of, hang on a minute, you just thought these would hover below mid-table, but then it's difficult to maintain that spot. Did they play the centre forward, Maupay? Did they rotate him? Did they drop him? All sorts going on there. And the only thing that's happening is they're just starting to lose games. We're not even at the turn of the year yet. And I think they'll be in those bottom 5 slots by New Year's Day, the way it's going. So Bournemouth last year, Brighton the new Bournemouth at the moment for me.
I think this year is going to be really, really, really tight. Between like 5 or 6 clubs, because there seems to be like 4 or 5 clubs that all seem to be in the same quality.
Well, it's interesting how since Lamptey's come back from his suspension, he hasn't been firing on all cylinders. They took him off yesterday. I think Lallana went off, and if I'm not mistaken, the Australian goalkeeper didn't play for Brighton yesterday either. Matt Ryan, I don't think he played. No. He's been one of the best players for the past couple of seasons.
Still, a few goalkeepers getting dropped. Obviously, David De Gea, he's been dropped. David De Gea. You've just mentioned the Brighton one, but possibly a miss from us tonight to mention that also Jordan Pickford got dropped, didn't he?
That's right. Is that a bit dangerous? Like Bournemouth went on the radio the other day saying that it's a bit dangerous that Ancelotti is, you know, rotating goalkeepers. But I think that's heavy. That's good competition, no?
Not when you win 2-0 away at Leicester and keep a clean sheet. You've put the lottery on, haven't you? You've got it right, haven't you? You know, you can coach for the day, at least. And he needs to find out whether these lads are good enough and they've got the temperament. And I think all in all, I think the new Everton goalkeeper that came in is bigger. They reckon he's better at shot stopping. He's just not better at kicking the ball out. So Ancelotti's got a decision to make. Does he go with Pickford's left foot or the better hands of the goalkeeper that he picks? So I'd always go with the better goalkeeper than the better footballing goalie every time myself. But I know the game's changing.
Yeah, you look at the keeper, the keepers that Ancelotti's managed, and you look and they've all been giants.
Dida,
and, you know, Dida, Buffon.
There you go.
They're all Petacek. All bit, you know, Pickford. What is he, 6 foot? He's not the biggest, is he?
No, good point. Great point.
His hands aren't the biggest either.
No, and you know what these Italians are like. They're, you know, I'm not sold on Pickford at all.
I think he's going to. I think he could be not completely toast, but I think that wasn't an experiment. I think that was just waiting for the moment. And I think this Olsen will be difficult to push now and to be moved now.
So if he's not playing, this is how bad. This is how a joke Southgate. If he's not playing, he would still be Southgate number one.
Who would be?
Pickford, wouldn't he? If he wasn't playing, Everton.
Yeah. And
he'll still stick in.
So he'll end up probably picking Pope from Burnley. He'll be probably fifth from bottom in the Premier League, conceding goals. So, but that's just how it is. These Premier League managers can't think about England, can they? They've just got to keep in their own house in order, and that's obviously what Ancelotti's done. At least for 1 week, he's got it right.
So Henderson really has got a massive opportunity if he drops the clangers.
Yeah, oof. True. But I think Nick Pope is slightly ahead of him, to be fair.
No, I know, but, you know, to slightly go number two.
So from your red persuasion, lads, what do you think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer will do now? You've seen the performance of Henderson tonight, but he has won the game. What happens next, lads? Well, you know, he's found out more about his keeper for sure. Has he got the temperament? Has he got the ball playing out ability, capabilities? Is he got the match shot stopping experience that he's shown in training? It's all been seen tonight, but you have actually won the game despite him conceding two. What happens next? I'll ask you both.
I've talked about this last year at the end of last year, saying, you know, it's going to be healthy competition. You know, he's dropped clanger after clanger for about, you know, two or three years now. Yes, Henderson has dropped one, but like you said, they've won the game, so I would stick with him.
Okay. How about you, Stel?
I don't think he's been bad this season, De Gea, has he? Has he made many mistakes or any mistakes? I can't remember him making any, to be fair.
Mate, last week, he turned his back on a ball and made himself smaller. He went sideways like that.
Which
and
one?
Turned away.
Which goal? Remind me.
It was last week.
When he got injured, at Southampton?
No, there's a goal in front of him and he turned his back and went like that. And I can't remember which one it was, but it was like, what are you doing?
Champions League?
It might have been a Champions League. Where the keeper's come out like that. He's come out and gone like that with his feet, but gone sideways.
That was the third goal against Leipzig, right?
That was it. That was the one, yeah. The against Clivert.
I don't know. We've got Leeds in the weekend.
Any keeper there is taking the ball and Clivert and sticking him in the stand. De Gea has turned his back and went like, hello.
Yeah, but this goes back to what?
No, that's not what you want the keeper to do, mate. You don't want him to go like that. You want him to go, fuck off, have that. Am I right or am I wrong, Seth? You don't want your keeper to turn your fucking back, do you?
No, fuck.
You want to go, wallet, fuck off, have that. You're not coming near me again.
it's what I've been saying about him for years. He doesn't have any command of the penalty area. He's not a presence. Like, he doesn't have that presence. When Peter Schmeichel was in goal, you wouldn't want to challenge him in the air because he's going to take you out. You don't want to cross the ball in the box and go for a header because he'll take you out. De Gea doesn't have that. He can't even catch a cold.
Most keepers, given the opportunity, they're going to take you out. You go up for a goal, you go up to the bar, they're going to have their hands up, they're going to have their knees up. Any chance, they're going to take you out.
When have you seen De Gea do that? When have you seen De Gea do that?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He's not inclined.
Do you remember Everton last season? Everton at home last season, Duncan Ferguson's game in charge, where the ball's crossing the box from the corner and he's gone for it. He's completely flapped that in. Rojo made the meal out of it. He's a pussy.
No, that was his Achilles heel. We've seen that when he first comes.
He's a pussy, yeah.
Crosses, you know, he's not, he's from Spain, so they all punch everything. We're used to people catching everything and like taking control. They're not that way inclined over there, are they? So yes, he's got better, but you know, it's a weakness for him.
But Leeds at the weekend, you pick Henderson over the hair in this game.
I'd stick with Henderson, yeah. Yes, he's made a clanger, but like I say, you know, he still looked strong in the game. It didn't mentally affect him. And he pulled off a couple of good saves by keeping him.
Mind you, then again, the Leeds keeper looks about 12 years old anyway, so battle of the babes, I guess.
Can't keep chopping and changing. You can't say, all right, once you make a mistake, that's it, you're out. You know, you've got to give him a good run of games, no? Or they might be just like on edge.
No, I agree. Look, Chelsea's goalkeeper conceded a goal, Wolves' winner yesterday. He tries to save it with his legs when it'd been easier to die for it. He's not going to get dropped, though, is he?
No, because, you know, Frank Lampard
doesn't want Kepa.
he's going to stick with him. And as a manager, he's your man, so you've got to be seen to back him. You can't say, I'm not going to put you. It's just indecision. You can't, not going to do that as a manager. You brought him in. Yes, he's really fun, but I'm still going to back you and give you confidence. He's not going to keep chopping and changing. I don't know. It's just not what I would do anyway.
Well, Steve's opened the can of worms here.
I probably have to say Henderson because of what I just said about the Everton situation. Mm. You're not going to then go back to Pickford. And keep, you know, he's put him in for a reason, and it was like, let football sort it out. Sometimes you're not sure and you just do it. You just say, let football sort it out. And it has, from Everton's point of view, they've gone and won 2-0. He's played well, kept a clean sheet. That one's a little bit more conclusive, but I agree with Rodri now. If I'm saying that about Everton, I've probably got to say it about United. My first thought was, well, De Gea will come back in for Leeds. But if tonight was a trial for Henderson, you know, it's also a trial for the team and the centre-halves, and you can't then go back to De Gea, back to Henderson, unless the cases are different. We'll obviously wait and see, but keeping a winning side will be crucial for United and for Everton. Everton's a stick-on. I think Pickford's out of the team now. United, I'm still not sure, but I'll go with Henderson with Rodri.
You'd want for Sunday to keep the same side, but with Leeds' energy and their extra day rest, you know, he might have to change it around.
Maybe.
Yeah, well, I was about to ask, what did De Gea do?
We're keeping you up there.
Sorry?
We're keeping you up. Yawning.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. I've been up since okay. 5 o'clock in the morning. It's all right. I'm okay. It's a natural yawn. Don't worry. It's not a bored yawn. It's a natural tired yawn. Relax. I've even had my cold coffee just for you. There you go. I know how much you like cold coffees. But no, I was about to ask, like, what did De Gea do so wrong at the weekend for him to be dropped? But then I realised it was the Manchester derby, and that game has completely gone out of my mind because it's so shit.
Yeah, it's probably best where it is, yeah.
Exactly. So, well, I don't know. I think it was a good test of character for Henderson today, going against a club that obviously he spent a couple seasons at. They know his weaknesses, I presume. And for him to go back there and to put up a couple of good saves, and especially the one at the end from Moussa, I don't think anyone could argue if he stays in the team, in all fairness. There you go.
Agreed.
Right. Shall we wrap up, gents?
Okay, Stout.
Yeah.
Splendid. Thank you guys for your time. Bye, Caesar. Nice seeing you again.
Later.
But he's getting fed up with us at the moment, isn't he?
Fucking podcast again. I want to go out for a piss. Look at him.
Dab in the arm. Get off.
He wants to go for a piss, man.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant. Cheers, gentlemen. Bye. Until next time, guys. Take care.
Cheers, fellas.